got a little story to start. Everybody says you're supposed to start with a joke, so I'm not very good at this, but we'll try it. Ship. Coming along. I'm from Minnesota, so this is going to be in Lake Superior. And along comes this big freighter. And sees this light up ahead, headed kind of straight for it. And so he gets on the radio and he says, "You up there want you to turn 10 degrees to the south." And voice comes back on the radio, "You're on a collision course. Turn 10 degrees to the north." And he's feeling a little cocky, so he goes, "This is First Mate Smith. Advise you turn 10 degrees to the south." And voice comes back on the radio, "This is Ensign Jones. Advise that you turn 10 degrees to the north." "Well, this is an ore freighter. Turn 10 degrees to the south." And the voice comes back, "But this is a lighthouse. You turn 10 degrees to the north." I think sometimes we think we're the ore freighter, but we're not. Nature is not going to move for us. We have to respect that and to live within the limits that our creatureness and the creation place on us. Another piece of good public speaking is you have 3 points and you tell them what you're going to tell them, and then you tell them, and then you tell them what you told them. So we got 3 points tonight. First is attitudes. I think we have to have the right kind of attitudes if we're going to successfully undertake an exploration of nature. Then we need knowledge. We need to know what we're dealing with, and we need materials. We are not by nature creatures of the out of doors. We don't come with thick fur and the ability to digest brush and live animals. And so we need to make some preparations. Attitudes. What kind of attitudes might be helpful for us? Why do we go out hiking? What are some of the good reasons and some of the not so good reasons to be headed out?
Nature appreciation.
Okay. What else?
Solitude.
Okay.
Exercise.
Okay.
Fun.
Fun. That's a nice, easy one to spell. And okay. Solitude.
How about confidence?
Okay. Confidence.
You forgot to put exercise, too.
Okay. Absolutely. That's a good one. What are some of the reasons that we might choose to go out hiking that might tend to get us into trouble?
Wrong clothing.
Okay, we'll get to that down to materials and equipment. But what might be some reasons for going out to do things that might tend to lead us to get into trouble?
Bravado.
Bravado, okay. I don't think I spelled that right, but you know what I mean. Okay, what else?
This would not be where you'd start your exercise program.
Okay, okay. How can we put that in a short term?
Physical fit.
Okay, but an attitude that we
like
don't
an attitude
have to be.
To get to the top, and that isn't necessarily the goal, really.
I'm sorry?
The attitude to get to the top.
Oh, okay, okay. Conquer.
Okay.
Something, whether that's yourself or the mountain or whatever. The other one was a real important one. Can anybody help me with a quick way to put that one together? That other idea that we had.
Unfit.
I'm sorry?
Unfit.
Okay. An attitude that we don't have to be prepared.
Right.
You don't have to be prepared.
Hubris.
Careless.
Careless. That's it. Thank you. That was exactly what I was looking for. So, So if we have some goals in mind, some goals of doing something to experience the natural world, you can't experience the natural world if it's now raining, you're freezing, it's 10 o'clock at night, and you didn't have dinner because you didn't bring any. How much nature are you going to appreciate?
Not much.
Not much. So we now need some, we had some other things besides purpose in our attitudes. Another, I'm going to run out of room here. Purpose, stewardship is the next attitude that I wanted to talk about. How does stewardship fit with the idea of hiking? What does stewardship mean to you when you think, when you're contemplating hiking?
Don't beat the flowers.
Okay, okay. Respect for nature. Okay. Another one here, this carelessness. We also have to have a respect for our bodies. I think this is where the story about fitness, about the person who hasn't done anything, fits in here. You don't, the first hike is not the one at the top of Bucks Canyon. Especially if you're 41 and 30 pounds overweight and
sitting on the couch.
Yeah. Okay. So, stewardship means that we're going to respect nature, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, and they'll talk quite a bit more about that tomorrow night in the Rangers lecture. Probably the two things we should bring up in regard to stewardship of nature, stay on the trails, bury waste. Back 20 years ago when I learned my hiking, they made us carry these little plastic shovels to dig our little holes. I hear from the hike house now that you're supposed to do that with your heel. Good job if you can get a hole 6 inch deep with your heel. But where there are not latrines, get away from the trail, get away from sources of water. If you read that little brochure coming up from Chelan on the boat, they actually had a major forest fire here from somebody trying to burn their toilet paper.
Yeah,
that was certainly what I learned to do, was to burn your toilet paper. But right now what they say in this eastern or western Washington desert climate is bury it. But do it 3 to 6 inches deep. And that's not just kind of scrape a little dust over it with your toe. Don't pick flowers or anything else. Dead downwood, but not snags, can be used for fires if you're out overnight. But even around here, I would say, in spite of the wood that's down, unless you're in an established campsite with a fire ring, please bring a stove.
Oh, I just wanted to mention one thing. At Holden Lake and Hart Lake and Lyman Lake, there are toilets.
Okay.
So before digging the holes, look for these toilets.
Okay, I asked somebody if there was one at Hart Lake because I thought I remembered one, and they assured me there wasn't. So obviously they didn't find it.
They didn't find it. Yeah.
Yeah. Please, they're at the campgrounds.
Yes.
There is a campground by Hart Lake. I've never been to Holden Lake, but I'm sure people can find it. Yeah.
Is there a Gary France here?
He's in the next room.
In the next room. Okay, thank you.
Time your activities here. Eat breakfast first before you leave, and take care of your business before you go on your hike. It really does help. But also respect your body. Know what your body can do. And for some of the people sitting in the balcony, buckskin's probably a pretty realistic thing. For some of us standing down front or sitting in the middle of the chairs, maybe it's not. But we've certainly got places around here that are very appropriate. There's a little nature trail down along the creek back here that families with little tiny children, people who have minor to moderate mobility impairments are certainly capable of doing that. There are two or three short 2-mile hikes that anyone who doesn't have a severe orthopedic problem on 10 Mile Creek, maybe Honeymoon Heights. The Heart Lake Trail up to the cutoff to Holden are very good hikes for people who are only in modest shape. I saw him.
I was just going to say, isn't Buckskin right up here?
No, Buckskin is up here. It's on the other side of
the some of the people that aren't aware of exactly what it is you're referring to.
Okay, but Buckskin is a tall mountain that requires climbing skills. I talked to someone last night that had been to the top of Buckskin, and they wish they had a rope and an axe. That's not where I'm going tomorrow. So respect what you can do. And but also another thing on the stewardship is here at Holden, it probably won't be an issue here in the fall, but there are limits on the number of people who can go on some of the more popular trails, because no matter how careful we are, there are just too many of us. The wilderness takes time to recover between insults from us humans. A quickie on that one also, I didn't have a lot of choices when I bought these hiking boots the week before I came. More on that story in a minute. But be a little careful about what you get on the bottoms of your boots. These are sort of medium lugs, but flat shoes that do not have lugs are the easiest on the trails. This type of lug is moderate on trails. The big, chunky, let's make sure that we get a grip in anything, are very hard on trails, where the degree of gripping that you need for the type of trails you're going on and no more, because you can do the damage of four or five people if you wear more than you need. Okay, and the last on the attitudes is respect. We've talked about respect for nature, but we also need to talk about respect of nature. You'll hear more about bears and cougars and weather tomorrow night, but be respectful of the fact that nature is stronger than you are. We'll talk some about clothing when we talk about materials. The weather here changes rapidly this season. It goes from 80 to 40 when it gets dark here, and you can get mighty cold, especially if you're wet. So I can't emphasize enough, I don't know how many times my husband has gotten on my case, do we really have to take all those sweaters? And the answer is yes. Because you never know what weather's coming over the ridge. Respect for rocks, respect for water, respect for animals. That comes a little bit further in knowledge, but you can know all you want to, and if your thought pattern is, it won't happen to me, you're the one it's going to happen to. Any other thoughts on attitudes? Comments? Let's move on to knowledge. We talked a bit about physical capacity. How do you decide how much is enough? How do you decide that this is what you can handle or this isn't what you can handle? Ideas?
Read up on it and see how high it is and how long it is.
Okay. So you need to know a little bit about the trails, but how do you decide what kind of trail you can handle?
You have to practice walking first.
Okay.
How far you can go in.
A little bit about how far you have gone, yeah.
I decide by whether I need any specialized equipment or not. If I need ropes or clamp-ons, I don't go on those trails.
Okay. It depends on what kind of equipment you're comfortable with. If you've had training in the equipment, if you've used it before, then perhaps it's appropriate for you. You don't do the 18 miles to Lyman Lake if you've never walked more than a mile before in your life. You don't do it if you haven't walked at least that much in a week, in the last couple of weeks. So you definitely do need to have some idea. You can take the longest thing you've done comfortably, and depending on your basic good health, your age, your orthopedic status, how do the knees and how do the hips work usually, And you can maybe, if you're willing to take it slowly, you can maybe double what you've done comfortably before. My back road's 2.5 miles. And I can do that and turn around and say I could do that again right now. So 5 miles, maybe I can, you know, especially if I'm going up to Hart and I'm going to sit there for a couple hours and then come back. Maybe I can do that, but I shouldn't try for Lyman. I haven't done anything over 3 miles, 3.5 miles in the last year. So I shouldn't try for 18 in a day. Okay, what else? How do you know how much you can carry? For those of you that are day hiking, this probably won't be a big issue. But anybody remember any rules of thumb as to how much you can carry?
Quarter of your body weight?
Yes. Roughly a quarter of your body weight. I would modify that to say a quarter of your lean body weight.
Yeah.
I don't think the fact that I've gained 30 pounds means I can carry another 7. It probably means I can carry 10 less.
Yeah, right.
This also means, especially if you're hiking with people of differing sizes, differing degrees of fitness, I once went backpacking in the Appalachians with a 200-pound PE major who put 55 pounds in his pack, and at the time I weighed 130, and I had 32 pounds in my pack, and he thought I was a piker.
Mm.
And I said, wait a minute, that's my quarter of my body weight, and you've got your quarter, and you're in a lot better shape than I am, so don't bitch about it.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, and especially for day hikers, think about the weight that you're going to carry. You will move much faster without this than you will with it. So if you think that you can walk around the golf course, which is flat, carrying nothing more than your little tape player in an hour, and you're planning to go to Hart Lake, and it's 4 miles up to Hart Lake, well, gosh, I can do that in an hour and a half. Hey, it's uphill, it's on rocks, you're carrying a pack, you're going to go slower. Average speed for an average hiker is about 2 miles an hour. If you're going significantly uphill or downhill, it will be less than that. And plan accordingly, time-wise. If you're not particularly physically fit, if you're with small children, if you're with other people who aren't physically fit, you can count on taking longer. Also, groups tend to travel more slowly than individuals. So, you know what you've got for daylight. You don't want to be coming back at 10 o'clock at night because you decided to go to Hart Lake at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, your physical capacity. One more thing on physical capacity. Once you get out on the trail, how do you know how to set your speed? What do you look for to decide whether you're kind of at the right speed for you?
Your heart rate.
Okay, you can stop and count your heart rate. Some of us don't carry watches. You can certainly do that. Anybody know the rule of thumb for heart rates? Probably the best thing is to already have a heart rate from an exercise program at home. Yeah. And I think if you want to use that, that's just fine. There's something a lot simpler than that for those of us who don't have watches or don't like multiplication.
Perceived exertion.
All right, I got another foil in the back corner. I like that back corner over there. Tell us about perceived level of exertion.
You pay attention. First of all, you have to be aware of how you feel in the first place doing normal type things. And perceived exertion, you should be able to talk. You should be able to breathe easily and comfortably walk along the trail.
Somewhere between a light sweat and choppy sentences is the maximum point you want to be. Now, if your purpose is to smell the flowers, you may not even want the light sweat. But don't try to push yourself faster than what you can talk through, is a pretty good rule of thumb. I heard somebody asking about, well, how do I keep from being stiff and sore? Well, one of the first things is, what do you do before you start?
Warm up.
What do you do when you warm up? Stretch. Okay, usually best if you do something light first to get your muscles physically warm. You know, you don't stretch right outside your cabin door. Stretch up at the baseball diamond or the garbology dock or, you know, someplace like that where you've walked at a modest pace long enough to get your muscles warm, then stretch. If you take a break, what do you do when you're done with your break? Stretch again. You can do a lot to prevent, if you've ever watched people these people that go out running every morning and they come back and you're just getting out of bed and they're coming back, and what do? Out by the garage before they come in the house. They stretch again at the end. If you stretch before you jump in the jacuzzi, and I think that was a wonderful idea, you'll feel a lot better in the morning.
I feel great now that jacuzzi does everything I need to.
You can also stretch in the jacuzzi, as nice.
Yeah. Probably a good idea to do a little stretching before the jacuzzi too. Okay. What else do you need besides a knowledge of your physical capacity? What else do you need to know about?
Knowledge of the terrain.
Okay. Terrain. Okay. Can somebody tell me, if there hasn't even been there, Heart Lake is 700 feet above the village and Holden Lake's about 2,000 feet above the village. Which one's going to be an easier hike?
Heart Lake.
Okay. And if you're going to the base of Heart Falls, it's only about a 200 foot elevation. You know, sounds like a lot easier hike. Yeah,
but don't let that really scare you away from Holden Lake, because there are a lot of switchbacks, so that the incline isn't as hard as it sounds.
No, it's certainly doable, but it's certainly going to be a more, even though the distance is no greater, the time will be greater to do that one, and the necessity for stretching. Mm-hmm. I did Copper Basin last time I was here, and my shins were killing me when I came back, because I didn't do the stretching. What I did before I came here is I spent 2 months on a treadmill at 8%.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because I wanted to not kill my shins when I went up and down those slopes. And I think that, if you haven't, then you've got to do lots of good stretching, and you've got to limit the kind of continuous uphill grades that you have. Anybody that's in good condition can do Holden, but they better not plan on doing Holden and then the next day doing something else strenuous, and they better plan on doing a lot of stretching. Okay, terrain, what else do we need to know about the natural environment? Got your topo map out. You've seen where the little lines are. You've looked at the mileage. What else do you need to know?
Weather conditions.
Okay, I thought I was going to get somebody to call for that one. Okay. So you need to know whether it's going to be 90 or whether it's going to be 30. You need to know whether it's likely to snow. Very definitely, anyone who's going to be out overnight this time of the year needs to be prepared for snow, because it might happen to you. You might even get some snow on a day hike. Certainly if you're going to Lyman or something like that, you better at least think about how would I deal with snow. Anybody remember the group that got caught in the Appalachians during the snowstorm in March last year?
Yeah.
Yeah. What happened?
No, they got out, but some of them lost their toes.
They took a group of high school kids in on an overnight to a shelter about 8 miles up into the mountains, and it promptly snowed 27 inches on them. They were there for 3 days and they had no extra food. They did not hike them out because they were not prepared, because they thought it was spring. Be aware of weather conditions. Be aware that your needs and your progress may change significantly. What else besides weather?
Animals.
Okay. As you can well tell by these deer here at Holden, it's not necessarily true that they're more scared of you than you are of them. The woods belongs to the animals, and we need to pay attention to that. They'll talk some more tomorrow about bears and things of that sort. But basically, respect that. Don't leave your food in your tent. Don't get between a mother bear and her cub. Don't try to pet the deer. pretty much common sense type stuff. What else? What else do you need? You need knowledge of what else?
Water source.
Okay. The official rule around here is to assume that there's giardia, and that means filter, treat, boil, or bring. For day hikers, simplest thing is just bring it. Guess one thing people who aren't aware of here at Holden is if you're headed toward Lake Chelan, you do not drink out of Railroad Creek under any circumstances below the tailings piles. There's arsenic in that water, and you don't want to drink it. There is no filtering, there's no nothing you're going to do to that that's going to make it safe. The side creeks are okay if you filter or whatever you're going to do for giardia, but don't drink or eat fish from the lower part of Railroad Creek. Okay.
How would you know that if you hadn't heard someone just say that?
You probably wouldn't, unless you knew the history of Holden and the fact that there were tailings piles up here. But what that means is be aware of the story. You know, there are places where I might still choose to not filter or boil my water, but I sure want to know if there was a camp the size of Holden that was still dumping their effluent in the stream just over the rise. I wouldn't drink out of that stream. Holden does process their water, by the way.
Right.
No problems there. Yes, Karen?
According to a gentleman from the Forest Service just today, said that they are testing the water, right? And that they have not found any arsenic.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. I had been told when I was talking to someone about the tailings that because that was an arsenic-based process, that there was doubt.
Evidently, in the last few years, whatever they've done up here is helping. They have not found things. Still not a good idea to do it.
Yeah. I was going to make both of those points.
Yes. There's still animals. The giardia.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Giardia is not an issue. If you are in an emergency situation, certainly giardia is treatable. That's better than becoming dehydrated. If you're in an emergency mode, not if you're in a planned mode. If you are trying to get fresh water, running water is usually purer than standing water. If you have a source of transport, water from the middle of a lake is usually better than water from the shore. But frankly, don't get into that situation. Okay, water. I think the other is technical. The other one I wanted to get to was technical hazards. Know your equipment. Know your basics. If you've got if you're going to use an axe, if you're going to use ropes, you better know what you're doing. Also, some basic skills. How do you make an emergency shelter? How do you start a fire if you're cold and you aren't going to be able to warm up otherwise? It's one thing to have your nice waterproof matches, but if you don't know what to do with them, they aren't going to do you much good. If you've got a lovely signaling mirror, but you don't know how to use it, it isn't going to do you any good. So be aware of what your equipment can and can't do for you.
Yeah, that's what the ranger said. If you have a compass, but you don't know how to use it, do you imagine?
No. Same thing with a map, for that matter.
Yeah, a map. Yeah.
Okay. And we talked about I wanted to do both skills and equipment. One other thing, knowledge. What's the basic thing you need to know before you start out on the hike? You may know the terrain, you may know about the mountains, etc., but you better know what your route is. You better know what you're planning to do. Okay.
I was going to say, on that water thing there, sometimes you check with the ranger where you're going in an area, he'll tell you where a water supply is. And sometimes that water could look brown, but that is still good water.
Sure.
So check with the ranger. If you know.
But he's got the correcting. Check with somebody knowledgeable.
Right.
And that doesn't necessarily mean the other guy from New York.
No.
who happened to drink out of that stream yesterday and doesn't feel bad.
Next week.
Yeah. 6 weeks now.
Or he may not, and you may. So. Be a little bit careful about who you get your information from. I think everybody gets, we're pretty concrete oriented in our thinking, and we get real turned on by materials. I've got a handout on the 10 essentials, and I think they're going to go over the 10 essentials tomorrow. So if anyone would like that handout about the 10 essentials for hiking, as Colleen pointed out to me last night, the 10 essentials does not include water. I don't know what they were thinking when they wrote those. So they are certainly not an inclusive list, but maybe helpful in getting you to think about what you want to do. I like to look at materials in terms of what needs they need. What are our basic human needs?
Food.
Okay. I didn't spell that right, did I?
No, T is right. T is right.
T-R-I-T-O-N. Okay, yeah, whatever. Okay, and I heard someone say something about shelter. Okay, and there's one more. And I kind of forced a name on the other one, so.
Clothing.
I'm sorry?
Clothing.
Well, that's part of shelter.
Emergency.
Okay, okay. I made that one community, and I'll tell you why here in a minute. And that's my personal quirk. You don't quote that to somebody else and expect them to know that. This one covers the fact that we are a communal organism. We cannot exist in a vacuum forever. That includes your safety issues. That includes your ability to find your route to get back. Why do we need to know where we're going so we can get back? So it involves things like hiking with companions. So basically our safety issues here. Okay, what are the basics for nutrition? Not materials yet, but what are our basic nutritional needs? What do we need on an everyday basis?
Water.
Okay, number one. What's the next?
Food.
Okay, what do we need from food?
Protein.
Energy.
Okay, we need energy or calories. And we need specific nutrients, like protein. Okay, so those are our basic nutritional needs. Can anybody else think of any other nutritional needs? Okay, shelter, what do we need?
Warm clothes.
Okay, we need warm. We need to be warm, what else do we need to be?
Dry.
Okay. Ooh. And we need to be protected from what?
Elements.
Okay. Sun. And what else do we need?
Rain.
Okay, that's part of dry. Protection from sun. How about insects?
Yeah.
Okay, and what else?
Animals.
Yeah. Friction and animals. Speaking chucks, that'd be crazy. Okay, and with what I put under community for safety, that's probably a better term for this one. What do we need for safety?
Good map.
Okay, we're getting into materials, but what part of safety? We need to be able to get back. What else do we need?
Go with somebody.
Okay. There's a place for hiking alone. When would be times that it would be reasonable to hike alone, and when are times that it wouldn't be? What kind of hike would be best to take alone?
City park.
Uh-huh. Basically what you're saying though is you can go alone if there are other people around, if it's close to the other things we need, the safety issues. So solo, and I guess we also need to talk about risk here. In general, it's best to hike in small groups. If something happens to you, there is someone there to be of help and to get further help for you. But on the other hand, one of our purposes for hiking was solitude. And if we want to have solitude, we have to accept some of the risks of being alone. When is it particularly dangerous to go solo?
Bad weather, probably.
Bad weather, okay.
Isolation.
Okay, the more isolated the area. What about your own personal capacity?
Have you got health problems or something?
If you have health problems, or if you're doing something that's maybe a little close to the edge of your capabilities. It's one thing for some of these young guys who've been in this area for quite a while and who have done these hikes with others on multiple occasions to choose to let someone know where they're going and when they're likely to be back. And it's totally another for someone who's out of shape, has health problems, and doesn't know the area to do that. Everything we do in life is a calculated risk. So solo, probably best when it's easy for you as an individual, not necessarily what would be easy for someone else. What might be well beyond the capabilities of some of our senior citizens, what might be probably the best I'm willing to do, might be dreadfully easy and very appropriate to be done solo by some of the permanent staff who've been here for a year who are in great shape. Okay, so easy, close, and let someone know. And I think that this one is essential no matter how expert you are. Let someone know that can set things rolling if you don't show up. And that may be as simple as writing your name on the list at the hike house and being sure to check it off so you don't get your name right at Vespers. Community includes getting back. What else? What else is a safety issue besides avoiding getting lost? What else could keep you from getting home besides not going
injuring yourself?
Injured, okay. And although it's probably less likely, illness could also incapacitate someone. So we need to deal with all three of these areas. Okay, what are you going to take for nutrition? So what do you need for water?
Fresh water or treated?
Okay, a canteen, you're going to need something to put your water in, whether you're going to treat it yourself or whether you're going to bring it from home. How much water should you take? How much water do we use in a day?
Probably about 2 quarts or more.
Okay, I'm glad you added that or more. 2 quarts assumes you're not sweating particularly much. It also means that you are not... that you are getting foods that contain normal amounts of water. If you're using dehydrated foods, you're going to need significantly more water to rehydrate that food as well. So certainly for a day hike, you need at least a quart in weather like this. 2 quarts is probably better. If you're doing something strenuous or if you're relying on primarily dry food, and whether that's food that's freeze-dried that you're going to reconstitute, or if you're taking mostly granola and other things that don't contain, and dried fruit, you probably need to take more water or to be prepared to treat water on the way. If you are staying out overnight, you're going to need more water than the 2 or 3 quarts a day that you're going to drink, because you're also going to need to clean, and you're going to need to use treated water at least for your final cleaning process. Energy. Lady?
Some kind of trail mix.
Okay. Oh, whether it's trail mix or whatever it is, you need a lot of calories. And so be sure that you take plenty of calories. How many calories do you think you probably go through in a day of hiking? Any ideas?
About 100 calories a mile.
Okay. Roughly 100 calories a mile?
For a 150-pound person.
Okay.
The heavier you are, the more calories per pound you need.
Okay. What else about that mile?
If it's strenuous or degree of...
The terrain. One other thing that makes a big difference in your calorie requirements.
Weight.
Your weight.
Weight that you're carrying. Okay, what else? What about the time of year? What difference does that make?
Well, wintertime, you burn more calories just keeping warm.
Absolutely. Any idea how many calories a young person on a fairly strenuous hike in the wintertime is going to use?
With a full pack, about 6,000 a day.
Eight. Yeah. On the other hand, a stroll from here to the trailhead of Holden, you're probably not going to increase your calorie output too much more than what you normally do in a day. So anywhere from 3,000 to 8,000 calories, that's a lot of food, especially when you get up in that wintertime stuff. What are your best sources of just plain calories?
Chocolate bars.
Okay. What's the quality of the chocolate bar that makes it a good source of calories?
Fat.
Okay. We're so drummed into low fat, low fat, low fat, low fat, and for most of us sitting on our couches, that's a pretty good idea. But if you're going to be hiking, especially in the wintertime, fats are not your enemy. Also carbohydrates. That's what ought to be the mainstay of our calorie intake when we're less active, but it's also a mainstay of our intake on the trail. So things like somebody mentioned trail mix, depending on what you put in the trail mix, it may be a lot of fat and sugar. It may be a lot of complex carbohydrates. Trail mixes usually have some fats. They'll also have protein if there's nuts in there. So they can be a good source. You're not going to live on trail mix alone. What else do we need in terms of nutrients? I heard someone mentioning protein. Protein can be, as we talked about, can be nuts. What else can it be?
Cheese.
Okay.
What about beef jerky or something?
Okay. Dry meat. Be a little bit careful that you take something that refrigeration does not matter. You don't take chicken salad sandwiches.
Peanut butter.
Peanut butter, okay. PB as a form of nuts, often a very easy form of nuts to use. So it's not hard to get protein on the trail. In short hikes, one day, overnight, I don't think you need to worry too much about nutrients other than simple calories. I think most of us feel better if we have relatively balanced diets, but if you don't take your carrot sticks, you aren't going to die of malnutrition. On longer hikes, I think it's a lot more important to make sure that you're getting your vitamins, whether in a pill or in making sure that your meals are balanced with salads and fruits and things. But I think in general, you'll feel better if you get plenty of fruit. Be sure, especially on longer trips, that you're getting enough fiber and that you're getting enough fluids, because you can definitely run into problems with elimination if you don't. It's real easy to not drink the water, because then you don't have to dig the hole to bury the waste, especially if it's cold and you're female. I went snow camping in Wyoming, and I definitely envied the guys their anatomy for the one and only time in my life. They don't get as cold. Anything else on food for hiking? I guess one other thing I wanted to mention is how much food should you carry? We talk about what you need for the day, but how much should you carry?
It sounds like you should carry enough for 3 days in case you get caught in snowstorm.
You know, should I carry 3 days worth to go down to 10 Mile Falls?
No.
Okay. The point here is be sure that you have an adequate emergency supply for any reasonable emergency you can think of given the type of hike that you're doing. If it may snow on you, you may need 2 or 3 days worth. If it's simply a matter that if you sprain your ankle and somebody has to come down to camp to tell them to come up and get you and you may be there for a couple of hours, you may need just an extra candy bar in your pocket. But think a little bit about that, Karen. Oh, I thought you said something.
How do you keep the candy bar from being melted?
Well, you can get a tropical chocolate bar, or you can do something else. I mean, and you're right. You have to think about the form in which you take food. Will it, once you get there, be something you're willing to eat? And I think we've all had the chocolate bar that's kind of, well, am I going to lick it off the paper or not? Or did it get spoiled? I mean, the cheese that got all dried out so that it was hard as a rock. Yeah, you gotta be careful about that. Okay, shelter. I think the first thing on shelter is what kind of foot gear. I guess I was going to do this before I started this. This is how I hiked to 10 Mile Falls the other day. I've got on long pants. I've got on, not hiking shoes, but, you know, they're closed-toed. They're okay. I've got my hat. I've got my sunglasses. That's why I've been wearing these. I mean, I'm not that stupid. I've got my first aid kit in my pocket. We can talk more about first aid kits if anybody wants to at the end. Pretty simple. I'm a physician. We like to be prepared for everything. This is all I take. When I go out backpacking for 4 or 5 days, I have a little bit more. It fits in something smaller than my boot. I have a friend who goes up the Canadian wilderness. They don't take a radio. They are 10 days on their own. He takes a whole little suitcase in his canoe. But, you know, again, be reasonable about what are you going to run into and what you need to take care of. I basically got moleskin, Band-Aids. I got a bandana in my pocket. If somebody gets a bad cut, I can put a gauze square on it, tie the bandana around it to hold the gauze square on. I even got a little tape in there. And come back and see the nurse. I got a couple candy bars in my pocket, mainly to keep my kids quiet. because I can't imagine anything that would keep me at 10 Mile Falls past a mealtime. Even if I sprained my ankle, I had my husband and my kids with me. They could come back and tell somebody, or they could, you know, give me a shoulder to put an arm over to hobble back. So I didn't need to take very much. I didn't take extra clothing, but I did have my jacket tied around my waist because it's kind of cool up by the falls. And, you know, under the trees, it's a little cooler than it is the rest of the place. But you don't have to take everything in the 10 essentials. I've been to 10 Mile Falls several times. I didn't take a map. I knew how to get there. I knew if I got disoriented, what to do. Go downhill, you'll find the road. So you don't have to have everything. On the other hand, if I'm going to go, and I went up to Heart Lake with a little more than this one time. My husband's, we only had one backpack that year, and my husband took the backpack to go fishing. And I've got a jacket that's, you don't have to always take a pack. I got a jacket with big pockets. I put my lunch on one side. I put the canteen in the other side. Put the first aid kit in my back pocket, and that's all I took. But on a slightly longer hike, boots, most of us have weak ankles. I think everybody has to choose their own ideas, but there's scree up by, if anybody doesn't know what that is, that's just rocks piled on each other and not very stable. There's scree up by Copper Basin. I hiked in tennis shoes last time, and my ankles were okay, but it wasn't my fault. Most people, for the kind of hiking on rocks that we do around here, could use some ankle support. There are some slippery spots. Something with a little bit of grip to it isn't a bad idea. When do you buy your boots?
A few weeks before you go.
All right. Beth's got the answer. You need them well broken in. The half-leather, half-cloth ones don't need the same breaking in that the leather ones do, but you need to know that they fit, and you need to have at least an initial breaking in period. How many pairs of socks do you wear? Okay, good. Why do you wear 2 socks? 2 pairs of socks.
Insulation.
Okay, that's one reason. What's the more important reason?
Because when it gets wet.
Perspiration.
Perspiration. There's another even more important reason. Friction. Okay.
If it gets wet, you know.
Yeah. And that will get to what kind of socks to wear. You need 2 pairs of socks because you want the friction not between your boot and your foot, but between the pairs of socks. And that's the number one reason for 2 pairs of socks. I see some smiling up there on the buckskin crew. Now, there's a lot of different ways you can do it, but I recommend that if there's any chance you're going to get wet, that your socks be wool in at least one layer, and that the layer next to your skin be either polypropylene or some equivalent non-absorbing material that wicks the moisture away, and an outer layer that will absorb the moisture. I hiked in the Appalachians and I took 3 pairs of cotton socks. And I thought, well, I've got wash one, wear one, have a spare. I washed my first 2 pairs the first night and they hung on the back of my pack for 5 days. And I walked in wet feet for the last 4 days because nothing dried. It's a good idea, first of all, to know what the climate is like. I've always hiked out here in the West, where you hang it on the back of your pack and in 10 seconds it's dry. In the Appalachians, that's not true. So be sure that you
when
know
you were,
what...
When did you go, in February?
No, it was in June. Hmm. It's humid back there. Yeah. At any rate, one way to do it, and there are certainly people that believe in all natural fibers and either wear silk next to their skin or wear wool next to their skin. Some of us don't like wool next to our skin. It's itchy. It doesn't feel good. They make polypropylene liner socks. I've got a couple of different kinds up here. In the summertime, I hate hot feet. These are relatively thin wool socks, but they do the two things we need to do. They wick the moisture away from your feet, and they provide that cushion so that you get the friction on the socks instead of on your feet.
You've never heard of that before, wearing two pairs of socks.
Yeah, you need to. You also need to be a little careful about your boots. I have one pair of boots that I could not wear anything thicker than one pair of polypropylene socks and one pair of thin wool socks. I've got a heavy pair of wool socks in my backpack that I was going to mention later. I couldn't wear two pairs of wool socks in my old boots. Be careful about that, especially if you're planning to hike in colder weather and you want two pairs of wool socks. Make sure you put on two pairs of wool socks when you try on the boots. So, okay, extra sweater. Something that sheds rain. I knew I was going to forget to put something in this pack. Something that you can make a shelter out of, and whether that's a poncho or whether that's what I brought this literally for this trip was I brought the ground cloth from our tent. They make these little space blanket things. If you can keep your kids from poking holes in them with pencils, they're pretty good. Extra pair of socks, especially if it's a little on the chilly side and you're going to be crossing streams or something. It's amazing what a dry pair of socks can do for your morale. Water. Map. Now, this is a topo of the whole basin here. I think I'm going to try to talk my husband into hiking to Stehekin next time we're here. But, basically, if you're going to stay on the trails, maybe all you need is the map that the hike house has. If you're going to go anything cross-country, you better have a topo of some sort. Compass, as Beth said, you better know how to use it if you're going to have it. Especially if you have children along or if you're in a group, a whistle so that someone can find you. My husband and I... still got married in spite of our experience in the Boundary Waters when we first met. We were in a group of six, and a city slicker lady was taking pictures with her camera, and she went from one flower to the next flower to the next flower, and 4 hours later, we found her on the next lake over the hill, totally covered with mosquito bites, totally miserable, and I had been planning our escape plan for who we were sending 2 days out to civilization to get the airplane and what I was going to do with the rest of the crew and what we were going to do with the extra canoe. You don't want to be in that situation. She'd had a whistle, we would have been in much better shape. We could have found her in about 10 minutes instead of in 4 hours. A knife. Now, a knife can be anything. I happen to, for serious camping this is not enough, but for day hikes, I happen to have several of these at home that I've gotten as little, I wouldn't say door prizes, but as little advertising gimmicks. My husband's got one in his pocket that's got the name of a drug on the side of it, but you can pick these up for $10 from REI. They got a little scissors that's great for cutting up moleskin for your blisters. They got a little toothpick. I don't know that I put it in my mouth after it's been in the inside of my knife for a while. But I've screwed screws with it. I've dug things out of places they've fallen into. Tweezers actually comes in handy for a lot of things. I don't know that this would get a sliver out of your finger, but it does all kinds of other interesting things. And there is a knife blade and a fingernail file. And that's enough for a basic hike. Couple things that are probably more important for the average hiker than a knife. Sunscreen, mosquito repellent. I don't know that anything works on the flies. around here. The cold weather's beautiful. You guys won't have nearly the trouble with the flies that we do in the summertime. Matches. You'll see these. I saw these down at the Sprouse Reeds in Chelan. They're really nice, these little waterproof matches. They've already got the waterproof ends. One of the things you need to know about these is when the little box breaks down, you better save this little tab here, because these things are not strike anywhere matches. You can also make your own waterproof matches, or if you truly have a waterproof container, but probably is important to have those. What else can you think of? My kids kept wondering why I stuck bandanas in all of their backpacks before we came. What's a bandana good for?
Use it for a towel.
Okay.
Keep the sun off your neck.
Keep the sun off your neck. I'm sorry?
Use it as a tourniquet.
Use it as a tourniquet. Let's get back to that one in a minute. In fact, let's cover that one right now. When should you use a tourniquet? Okay. I heard the two extremes. Rarely should one ever have to use a tourniquet. But on the other hand, if the alternative is to bleed to death, use a tourniquet. Better to lose an arm than to lose your life. Basically, pressure will stop 99.99% of bleeding. The only thing this is good for is to hold that little gauze square on your leg. So you tie it tight enough so it doesn't fall off, not tight enough to cut off your circulation. But it can also just give you some volume here. You've got a good gash on your arm that's bleeding. You may put the gauze square on here, but that gauze square is going to be wet really quick. This will give you something else so that you've got something to protect you. Okay. Oh yeah, you can use it for a napkin, you can use it for a signaling device, you can use it to wipe perspiration off your face, multiple uses. You can use it for a belt, you can use it to tie two things together that have fallen apart. I highly recommend them. I have a little skimpy one because my kids stole all my regular bandanas, but very useful. Okay.
It's in our little pocket, not
code. Now, first aid kits, I think there's all kinds of things you can do with first aid kits.
Pocket. Oh,
yeah. I guess the only things I would like to say, and you can look at all kinds of first aid kits, and you can get as elaborate or as skimpy as you want. I think the main thing, what are the main things that are going to happen to you?
Cuts.
Okay. And what else?
Bee bite.
Okay. Cuts, sprains, and stings. Okay. Ace bandage for your sprained ankle. It's not going to fix it, but it may feel better, and it may be the difference between being able to walk on it and not being able to walk on it. Something to help stop bleeding on big cuts, a Band-Aid to put on the little ones. If you want tape, it's certainly neater and easier than trying to figure out how to make the bandana make it all stay on. I happen to have some. I don't know that I'd go out and buy it if I didn't have it. Band-Aids, gauze squares, moleskin. Very handy little gadget. You can make do with Band-Aids over blisters, but put a little moleskin on it when it first starts to get a little sore and you won't have the blister.
Yeah, that's the best thing.
Yeah, very definitely. You can also fix tents. You can do all kinds of things with moleskin if you have to. Any other comments on first aid kits? Questions? I think the big thing is there are two extremes. You can take everything and spoil your fun. You can take nothing and put yourself in unnecessary danger. Be prepared, be reasonable, is all I'm asking. Take your water, take some kind of a first aid kit, even if it's two aspirin and two Band-Aids. You've at least thought about what you're going to do to take care of yourself. Be dressed appropriately. To go to 10 Mile Falls, I'd wear these. I don't like getting mosquito bites on my legs. I don't like getting brush scratches. I would wear jeans if I were going anywhere further, because this is going to rip real easily and it's not going to protect me anymore. I know a lot of the young people here will hike in shorts, but they're going to be more likely to get sunburned. They're going to be more likely to get cuts, scrapes, scratches. I do recommend long pants. The other thing is I don't recommend tank tops. But I personally hate sunscreen. What I didn't bring tonight, because I forgot to pack it in Minnesota, is I have an incredible, grody, old, long-sleeved shirt. Looks like sin, but it keeps the sun off better than any sunscreen you've ever seen. If you have a loose-fitting, long-sleeved shirt, it will do more for bugs and more for sun than anything else.